November 6, 2007 in Honolulu. Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shigasari Gaur Bhakta Vindaki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopina Shaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jaya Mathura Dhamma Ki Jaya Madhuri Maya Pura Dhamma Ki Jaya Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jaya Ganga Maya Jumuna Devi Ki Jaya Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani Ki Jaya Samaveta Bhakta Vindaki Jaya Gaur Premananda. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vikalesha Mati Bhakti Rajaswami Vitanamani Namaskar Swati Devi Gauravani Pachayan Vasesa Sinavani Vaskachayan Deshachayan Vande Hom Sri Guru Sri Vitala Bhagavan Sri Guru Vaishnava Sri Rupam Sarvajatam Sarvanam Adhanatam Vatam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam, Sadvaditam, Bhadijana, Santa, Krishna, Chaitanya, Dhamma, Sri, Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sankana, Vanita, Sri, Vishakam, Vita, Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 20, we're going to read 19, 20, 21, 22. Yoso guha praharana no matila nittam bakunjo pikshiro dina shikyamano bhagavatam varunena bhikuto divayo bhavuta.
Yeah.
Which?
Ashau.
That. Mountain.
Guha Praharana.
By the weapons of Kartikeya.
The son of Lord Shiva.
Unmaitita. Shaken. Nittamba Kunjaha. Whose trees and vegetables along the slopes. Api. Although. Shira Udena, by the ocean of milk, Asikyamana, being always bathed, Bhagavata, by the greatly powerful, Varunena, the demigod known as Varuna, Abhigupta, protected, Vibhaya Bhavuva, has become fearless. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Although the vegetables living on the slopes of Mount Kruncha were attacked and devastated by the weapons of Kartikeya, the mountain has become fearless because it is always bathed on all sides by the ocean of milk and protected by Varunadev. Anybody know the story of Kartikeya attacking the vegetables on Mount Kruncha? The war of the vegetables, you know. Maybe they were sort of innocent civilians or something in another.
The killer tomatoes.
The killer tomatoes. The killer tomatoes. Sounds like there must have been some sort of celestial war in which the mountain got attacked and the vegetables were just kind of innocent bystanders. You know, that happens sometimes. There's a war. And
the word is attack.
Yeah, it says we're attacked and devastated, but still, I mean, it's just like if you throw a weapon, you may, and if you throw a weapon at your enemy, you may burn up the trees in the area.
But you were attacking the enemy.
You were attacking the enemy, not
the. You were attacking the trees.
You were attacking the trees. In Vietnam, we had Agent Orange to destroy, specifically to destroy the vegetation. So maybe there was some. I mean, sometimes you want to destroy the food of the enemy. So that could be, that is a war tactic.
Yeah.
You know, you burn the fields and that kind of thing. So that could be. Okay, so why is Mount Kruncha fearless? Two reasons why Mount Kruncha is fearless. Anybody know?
Bathed by the ocean milk.
Bathed by the ocean milk on all sides and protected by?
Varuna.
Varuna, yes. This is what we're doing right now with Varuna. Text 20. The ruler of this island was another son of Maharaj Priyavarta. His name was Gritaprista, and he was a very learned scholar. He also divided his own island among his seven sons. After dividing the island into seven parts, named according to the names of his sons, Gritaprista Maharaja completely retired from family life and took shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, the soul of all souls, who has all auspicious qualities. Thus he attained perfection. So, of course, this is the standard we read over and over again in the Bhagavatam of great kings. They ruled, and then as soon as someone else was ready to take over, they retired and focused exclusively on Krishna. Text 21. The sons of Maharaj Gritaprista were named Ama, Madhurua, Megaprista, Sudama, Rajishta, Lohitarna, and Vanaspati. In their island, there are seven mountains, which indicate the boundaries of the seven tracts of land. And there are also seven rivers. The mountains are named Shukla, Vardhanmana, Bhojana, Upavarhina, Nanda, Nandana, and Sarodbhadra. The rivers are named Abhaya, Amritobra, Aryaka, Tirthadvati, Rupavati, Parivravati, and Shukla. Anybody ever remember any of those? None of them.
Amma.
Let's see. Okay, that's the name of the sun. Amma is the name of the sun. So, Maharaj Parikshit is going to die in how many days when he's listening to this?
Seven.
Well, that seven was when he started. This is Canto 5 out of 12. So how many more days would you estimate he has left? About 4 days left. So there you are. You've been diagnosed. The doctor, you have some persistent pain somewhere. You go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you have 4 days to live. Okay. Would you be listening to this? Anybody?
Would you be listening to what?
To this verse. About the seven mountains, seven rivers, the names of the mountains, the names of the rivers, and the names of the sons of Maharaj Rudraprastha.
No, I always have trouble with all those names and mountains.
But if we had, you know, generally, if somebody has 4 days left to live, we don't think about it. So why was Maharaj Pariksit listening to this when he had 4 days left to live?
Should be able to respond when he was speaking.
Well, when he was speaking in relationship to Maharaj Pariksit's question. So why is he giving them this information? Because he's already told us at the end of the second canto that once you hear about and glorify Krishna, especially one who's about to die, which could be any of us, of course, we don't even know if we have 4 minutes. So why is he listening to this?
Because he ties it all in relationship to Krishna.
Yes.
Ties it all to the source.
Yes. And does this remind us of a verse in Ishopanishad where it says that one should know everything, sat and asat, and one who knows both, he can conquer death. And Prabhupada translates that verse, one should know all the qualities, names, pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one should know the cosmic manifestation with its demigods, men, animals. I mean, in that verse, Prabhupada is indicating that one should know geography, history, science, but in relationship to Krishna. So this. And verse 4, tomorrow, which we won't talk about today, also deals with this, seeing Krishna in the creation. And seeing Krishna in relationship to the creation. So this is very important for us because this is where we are. We want to see Krishna in relationship to where we are. So there's three chapters in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains how one can see him in the creation. What are those three chapters?
7, 10, 11.
All right, but there's one more then, if we're going to count 11. 15. Okay, 7, 10, 15, and you could say also 11 is a universal form. So that's not only where we start. You know, sometimes we say that that's for the beginner, seeing Krishna in the sunlight, the moonlight, etc. But even a devotee of the level of Maharaj Parikshit, who saw Krishna personally in the womb, who was the grandson of the Pandavas, and who's about to leave his body in this association of great sages. So he's seeing Krishna both ways, both directly in his lila and through everything. Actually, the devotees in the spiritual world, they have many stimuluses for their stimuli, for their ecstatic love for Krishna. These are called udipans, Rupa Goswami explains. So actually everything can be an udipan, even the names of the rivers of the universes and the names of the sons of the great devotees can all be a stimulus for love of Krishna if one meditates on their problem. Okay, text 22. The inhabitants of Panchadweep are divided into four castes called the Purushas, Rishabhas, Dravinas, and Devakas. Using the waters of those sanctified rivers, they worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by offering a palmful of water at the lotus feet of Aruna, the demigod who has a form of water. Perfect. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Apamaya Ashmaya, which he's quoting from the Sanskrit from the verse, With joint palms, the inhabitants of the various sections of Kramchandri offer the sanctified waters of the rivers to a deity made of stone or iron. So he's saying this because in the verse is no indication of the form of this deity. Prabhupada in the translation said that Varuna has a form of water. So the explanation is given that the deity is made out of stone or iron. So here we see some relationship with the names of these places, that these rivers are all very holy. And great souls are offering the waters of this river to Varuna as a way of pleasing the Supreme Lord. Now, there is a way of demigod worship that pleases Krishna. And what is that?
If it enhances your service to Krishna.
If it enhances your service. Can we give an example?
The devotees worshiping Goddess Durga, Krishna as their husband.
Yeah, which they're going to be starting that in just a couple of weeks at the end of Kartik. Starts that. Yeah. So here you don't have the Yamuna, but you could bathe in the sea. Prabhupada said, even in these sacred rivers, you can bathe in the sea. But it's not much austerity to bathe in the sea in Hawaii in December. Whereas in Vrindavan, in the winter, it's quite an austerity to bathe in the Yamuna. Right, also, one can worship any jiva who's acting as guru. Right, just like we're worshiping Srila Prabhupada, worshiping our spiritual masters, they're jivas. So why are we worshiping a jiva? This question is often asked, why don't we just worship God? But Krishna is very pleased when you serve his devotees. So if one worships the demigods as guru, if one is worshiping the demigods as Vaishnava, that is very nice. That is very nice. So one can worship Lord Shiva as Vaishnava, as guru, if Lord Shiva is one's guru. But to worship them as independent gods, if one is thinking, oh, Prabhupada is an independent god, that is very offensive. So I'm thinking about this mountain, Mount Kramcha. This mountain is a living entity. And even though such a powerful being as Kartikeya had attacked it, it's fearless because it's always bathing in the ocean of milk and is protected by Varunadev. So we also, in this world, we're constantly being attacked, generally by not something as powerful as Kartikeya. We don't have to be attacked by a being on the level of Kartikeya in order to be full of fear. And generally in this world, we're always full of fear. We're in fear of poverty, we're in fear of sickness, we're in fear of injury, we're in fear of pain, we're in fear of, infamy. We're in fear of being a social outcast, we're in fear of being homeless. I mean, what are all of our fears, because as long as we identify with this body, the body is very vulnerable. You know, all we have to do is trip on the stairs and we can end up in the hospital, or we brain damage, or we just get hit by a car or something like that, or we can get a stroke, and these things happen to people all the time. We just say the wrong thing, as hearing there's some big professor, Nobel Prize winner, and he made some little misstatement. And for that, he's finished. He's thrown out of his post. He lost his pension. He's just being blasted in all of the newspapers just because he made some actually scientifically valid statement, but it wasn't politically correct. And so he's lost everything. Right? And we know that this can happen to us. We just mess up. We say one thing, and all of a sudden, we're not going to be a member of the Hare Krishna movement anymore. Nobody will like us. We'll be out on the street. It's there, isn't it? We have these fears. Right? And plus, we're being constantly attacked by lust, by anger, by envy, by greed, by illusion. And these are very formidable enemies that can destroy all of our vegetables, of all of our creepers of bhakti. Right? We're trying to nourish our bhakti creeper, and we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're offering food, we're dressing the deity, and just, you know, one attack of envy against a Vaishnava, you know, all of our vegetables are decimated. All of the little, you know, we're finally, you see the bud of the tomato is growing, and you think, oh, I'm going to get a tomato. You're feeling some ecstasy in the kirtan. You're really enjoying prasadam. You know, you're loving reading Prabhupada's books. Oh, there's finally a tomato growing on my bhakti creeper. Right? And then all we have to do is envy a Vaishnava or feel lust, or feel anger, and, you know, All of a sudden, some big grasshopper comes along, and our little tomato doesn't grow. So we're constantly being attacked by so many things. Therefore, we're always fearful. Actually, material life is characterized by a constant state of fear. We get used to it. I've just now flown from New Zealand, which is also a Pacific island, and it's about equidistant from the equator as Hawaii, but it has quite a different climate. It's much cooler and it's not humid. As soon as I got off the plane, immediately I noticed the humidity, just instantly. But I'm sure you people who live here don't notice it very much. It's just part of your environment. It's just what you live with. It's just like the people in New Zealand, they don't think it's cold there. Interesting. Like, it's freezing here. So whatever we're surrounded with all the time, we become accustomed to it. Or like people who live in a place that's very noisy. You know, here it's very, very quiet. But if you're living right by a highway, or we lived in North Carolina right by train tracks, and the first night it woke us up, the train, after that you sleep through it. And I remember some devotees were visiting us from California. They were sitting on the veranda speaking to us. And we're just having a conversation, and at one point the train starts going by, you know, and they say, "Do you always just sit quietly when there's an earthquake?" It's an earthquake, it's a train. But we didn't even notice it, you know, to them, that it was an earthquake. So we're so accustomed to being in a state of fear, we don't even notice it. It's actually very unnatural for the soul. But we've just become conditioned to it, and we're accustomed to always being fearful. So what's our solution? Here it says that this Mount Krancha, it becomes free from fear by being always bathed. The word here is always. Always bathed. Achichyamana, being always bathed by the ocean of milk, Shira Udena. So this milk that we want to be bathed with always, and being protected by the Munadev, so two things, always bathing in the ocean of milk and always being protected by the Munadev. So that's exemplified in this verse 22, where these devotees, all the different castes, all different kinds of devotees, they're worshipping Krishna by taking shelter of Varuna, by taking shelter of a Vaishnava. So the way we get free from fear is we always stay under the protection of a Vaishnava. And our, of course, the leading Vaishnava that we stay under the protection of Srila Prabhupada. And we take shelter under Krishna in the form of a Vaishnava, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right, Lord Nityananda. And we stay always under their protection. That doesn't mean just sentimental, oh, Gauranga, oh, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. But it means we take firm shelter under their instructions. We take firm shelter under their instructions. And what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's primary instructions? His primary instructions, two primary instructions. What were they? Oh, okay. That wasn't what I was thinking of, but I like those two instructions. Asat Sangatya, give up the association with matter, which is what's causing us fearfulness. Not just non-devotees, but in other words, stop associating. Stop thinking, I'm this body, I'm this family, I'm that. And preach Krishna consciousness. I was just thinking, I was just reading Adi Lila 17, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving the Harinama, 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 Evakevala, Stavana, 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 Bhaktivinoda. Saying, always chant Hare Krishna. And then he says, chanting Hare Krishna, one must chant how?
Trinadapi,
yes. One must chant, one must be very tolerant. And Prabhupada is saying there, you know, that to be that tolerant, that if you're attacked, you don't retaliate, he says. You don't retaliate. You're just like the grass that everybody can walk on, or two ways the tree is tolerant, that if it's thirsty, it doesn't ask for water, and if it's cut, it doesn't protest. And Prabhupada said to be that tolerant is very difficult, but that can be achieved by chanting Hare Krishna. And so so we have these instructions. Give up association with the temporary. Right? This is also exemplified by the son of Maharaj Priyavrata. You know, that as a householder, he was giving up association with the temporary by using everything in Krishna's service, and then as a vanaprastha, he's giving up association with the temporary by externally no longer engaging in those activities. So how one gives up association with the temporary, with asat, depends on one's varna and one's ashrama. Depends on how that manifests. It manifests a little differently, depending on one's bodily situation. I mean, just like the men shave their head and the women cover their head. Same principle. But the manifestation is a little different according to the body. So how one detaches oneself from matter. Because if you're attached to matter, how can you be fearless? Impossible. If I'm thinking I'm this body, and I'm thinking I'm this mind, then all of the attacks and the threat of attacks on this body and mind are going to make me fearful. How can I avoid it? It's impossible. I can't retain attachment to Maya and be fearless. And if I'm fearful, then I'm going to be defending myself. And if I'm defending myself, how can I be Trinada B? I can't be. And if I'm not Trinada B, then how can I chant? Or you can start the other way and say, by chanting, even if we're attached to so many things, right? Sarva karma, kama, sarva karma, giving up all attachments, by chanting, then we become tolerant, then we become fearless. Then we can detach ourselves from Maya. So it works a little bit, you know, okay, I chant a little, then I can become detached. The more I become detached, the better I can chant. The more I can chant, the more I become detached. The more I become detached, the better I can chant. And when one becomes not even completely detached, when one becomes mostly nasta prayasya bhadrayasya nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavata uttama shloki bhakti bhavati nashtaki, then reaches the brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakanchati. When we reach that stage where we're mostly, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I don't have to worry about all these things because they're not me. Then one becomes fully joyful and fearless. And we do that by always bathing in the milk of the holy name. Constantly bathing in the milk of the holy name. And in meditation, not just chanting superficially, but meditating that the holy name is Krishna and taking firm shelter of the instructions of the Vaishnavas. And if we do that, we can become fearless. But we have to do it. Like they say, it works if you work. So we have to actually take that initiative to do that. And then, even if Kartikeya comes, it's okay. Even if Kartikeya comes to destroy our vegetables, we'll be protected by the milk ocean and Varuna Dev. So we have 2 minutes. Questions, comments? Yes.
You know that when we say the ten offenses, and then it's almost an afterthought, and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions, that seems to be the main one.
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that the key is attention. He says the key is attention. What will happen if you pay?
That's also.
It seems it's also an offense to be attentive. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that if we're attentive. And Prabhupada talks about there has to be a quality. In the prayers of Queen Kunti, he says there has to be this quality of surrender. But what happens if you have a quality of surrender and you're attentive is you become aware of what your attachments are. Jnana Dipena Bhashvata, the chanting shows you, you have an attachment to this. So then if we don't respond to that, if we just say, well, that's too bad, I'm keeping it anyway, then the chanting is not very effective. So as we chant, you know, so it's like we're under the instructions of the guru, and the guru says, okay, now you've progressed from the second grade to the third grade. Now you need to do this. And we say, no. So it's understood in the beginning we have so many attachments. But as we progress and are attached, in the beginning we're not even aware that we have attachments. In the beginning we think we're pure devotees almost. But as we become aware we have attachments, we have to... and we can't give them up ourselves, actually. Krishna has to take care of them, but we have to want to give them. Yes?
Yeah, is there a limit to tolerance? It seems the point where tolerance becomes acceptance and it's no longer any value.
That kind of tolerance is not wanted. the kind of there's no limit to tolerance, but it may manifest differently depending on your situation. Just like there was that snake who was a disciple of Narada Muni, and Narada Muni told him to stop biting. And then he came back later and he said, how's it going? And he said, well, now that I don't bite anybody, everybody throws stones at me. He says, well, don't bite, but show your hoods. So being very tolerant doesn't mean that we walk around like mice. It doesn't mean that we go up to people and say, would you please hit me? You know, would you please spit at me? Although there are instances of devotees who did things like that. I mean, Maharaj Vrishabhdev did that. Maharaj Yudhisthira did that at the end. So it's not that that's totally unbonafide to do that. But generally, the devotee as a preacher, they don't want to put themselves in a position where people are purposely disrespecting them. But if it happens, I mean, if you have a material means that's dharmic for counteraction, that can be done. But otherwise, just like Maharaj Ambarish, he didn't counteract Durvasa because Durvasa was a guest of the Brahmana. But if Durvasa had been another Kshatriya on the battlefield, Ambarish Maharaj certainly would have fought with him. He was Kshatriya. If some other Kshatriya came and insulted him, he would have fought. So it depends on what the circumstances. But the mood is that. Who am I? And I'll just give you a little example of how that a mood of total tolerance is actually very wonderful. So suppose you have $5 and you buy something that's only worth $2, you're unhappy. If you get something that's worth $5, you're okay. If you get something that's worth $100, you're very happy. So our degree of happiness is in direct relationship to how undeserving we feel. The more we feel that we have rights, I have a right to be treated this way, I have a right to be treated that way, the more we'll be unhappy. And the more we think, yes, whatever I get, you know, I accept. And then we become very, very joyful. Just like if you have nothing and you get something worth $100, you're much happier than if you spent $100 for it. The less one feels one's deserving, the more one is very happy in all circumstances. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.